for this, and I view this as certainly a brilliant marketing strategy, if nothing else. And I think it's generally the correct way of looking at it, that all MIMDI machines effectively have a full operating system on every node. And the essential thing that's changed is, I say, that when we did this, the machine we built had 128 kilobytes, the N-Cube, which was the N-Cube 1 had half a megabyte of memory on each node, and I think the IPSC one, the first Intel hypercube, had a comparable amount of memory. It was very difficult to put Unix on the node, but now it's almost impossible to think of building a computer without enough memory to put Unix on every node. So the cost of memory the amount of memory that you can afford to put on every node has got so great that you might as well have Unix on every node. So whatever the logical way of doing it is, which may or may not be to have Unix on every node, people put Unix on every node of one of these machines. And IBM, I believe, was the first people to do that. With thinking machines, followed the mode we did. On the CM5, they did not have Unix on every node. But then, while they were going bankrupt, they were busily changing their model to Unix on every node because that's what the customer wanted. Okay. So there is a so-called MPI I.O. initiative, which will define what I.O. means in MPI, but I am not terribly familiar with that. So that's just as there was an HPF2 extending HPF, so there are certain extensions to MPI going on. However, unlike HPF2, which is essential to make a reasonable HPF, the extensions to MPI are not essential. Okay. So it does mean, for instance, today, what you see today, if you want the output to occur in a particular order, you're responsible for doing that. Because there is no guarantee. If each node does a printf, what order it will appear? The concept of order does not exist. Whereas I say in the operating system we built,